Good evening. I'm Frederica Freiberg from Wisconsin Public Television.
And I'm Sean Johnson from Wisconsin Public Radio. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear the governor introduce his plan for how to plug what he says is a $5.7 billion shortfall in the state budget for the next few years.
In fact, the governor has already walked into the assembly chambers to give his address before the full legislature and other members of the constitutional members and the Supreme Court members. He is right on time. He embargoed his address. He offered it to reporters late this afternoon. We can tell you some headlines coming into this address. The headlines are that Governor Doyle will raise income taxes and capital gains taxes on the wealthiest Wisconsinites. He says he also will make more than $2 billion in cuts to state agencies.
And there's also some familiar tax increases in there on oil companies, on cigarettes. Cigarette tax will go up by 75 cents a pack. Tax on multi-state corporations. And if you look at the general fund where all those taxes go, it's going to be pretty similar to the general fund for the last two-year budget. It's about flat. But overall funds, federal funds, and particularly federal stimulus funds from the package signed today by President Obama, the budget goes up quite a bit.
Good thing for Governor Doyle for those federal stimulus funds. I do believe that the governor is probably nearly at his position there before the legislature. But ahead of him taking that, we want to introduce you to someone who's joining us here for some expert analysis, that being Todd Barry of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. He will join us following this address for analysis and to help us with all of these numbers. So, Todd, thanks a lot for being here. I think the governor may begin before we have a chance to take a look at this. This is obviously a tough budget for the governor, and he's moved a lot of money around.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think the real star behind the podium up there is President Obama and Dave Obie, you know, with all this federal stimulus.
Let's take it now to the governor with that said.
The great state of Wisconsin, the Honorable Jim Doyle.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. 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 Well, it's nice of you to clap before I begin speaking, because I'm not sure where we're going to end up tonight. But to Speaker Sheridan and Speaker Pro Tem Staskunas, President Risser, Majority Leader Decker, Minority Leader Fitzgerald, our other Minority Leader Fitzgerald, Congressman Ron Kind, who I believe is with us tonight, Congressman Steve Kagan, Supreme Court Justices, Constitutional Officers, Tribal Leaders, Members of the Cabinet, distinguished guests, members of the Wisconsin State Legislature, and fellow citizens of Wisconsin. When I stood before you 3 weeks ago, I laid out the effects of the national economic crisis on our state. We all know that our country is in tough times, and it's going to probably be very tough for a while. We didn't choose these circumstances, but we will choose how we confront them. Together, we are going to address a budget deficit that stands at $5.7 billion. It will demand hard decisions, but the choices we make will reveal clearly who we are and what we value. The choices ahead of you aren't the kind that most people run for office hoping to make. I bet that no one here campaigned on limiting their favorite program to a 5% cut. But everyone is going to have to share in the sacrifice, and everyone is going to have some faith that if we all work together, we can get through this in a way that will make us stronger in the years ahead. As I put together the budget I am presenting to you tonight, five principles shape the decisions that I've made. First, protect what is most important to Wisconsin. Protect education, our health care, our public safety, and our ability to create jobs and grow the economy. Second, cut what is not essential. Third, use the federal money under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan wisely. Fourth, protect the middle class against tax increases. And finally, leave this state in better shape than it was before. This is clearly a time when we will have to make very deep cuts. This budget makes the largest cuts we've ever seen. It rejects new spending requests, however worthy. At the same time, my first principle is to keep our commitment to Wisconsin's top priorities, priorities that our state has maintained for generations. To me, that means protecting education. This budget does not fund nearly what was requested, but it does provide an increase for our schools when almost everything else is being cut. That has two effects. First, it means we'll invest in students and our teachers so a second grader gets the education she needs now and not years later when the economy improves. And second, it means that this budget is not just shifting the responsibility of paying for our classrooms to the local property taxes. Let me repeat that. By investing in our schools, the state of Wisconsin is protecting the local property taxpayers. Property taxes hit families hard, especially families who have lost jobs, and this budget holds the line on property taxes. This budget does not back away from the gains we have worked so hard to achieve in health care coverage. We are not going to start telling the 70,000 kids who enrolled in Badger Care Plus this year that because the economy is bad, they can't see a doctor anymore. We have made Wisconsin a national leader in access to basic, affordable health care coverage. That's not an achievement we can let go of because times are tough. Our university system is going to have to be more resourceful, but this budget makes sure that more students in Wisconsin have a shot at higher education and that tuition stays within the means of Wisconsin families. We also have an obligation to local governments so that they can continue to keep their streets safe and their neighborhoods strong. Helping to fund police and fire protection is not only the right thing to do, it also keeps local property taxes down. This budget limits the cut to shared revenue to 1%. Because we are holding up our end of the bargain, cities, counties, and other municipalities will be able to keep their budgets balanced without resorting to big property tax increases. This budget recognizes that now more than ever, this is the time to invest in good Wisconsin businesses to help grow jobs. We can strengthen our efforts to advance our workplaces and our workforce, whether it's in agriculture, manufacturing, or biotechnology. This budget keeps these commitments strong, and to do so, it makes a lot of tough cuts. These cuts build on our efforts to reduce spending over the last year. To begin with, we started by cutting state government spending under the budget we are currently under by $226 million. As the economy slowed last spring, I cut spending by an additional $270 million. This was followed by freezing state employee bonuses, ordering the sale of 500 state vehicles, and slowing grant programs. My cabinet secretaries froze their salaries. In all, we've been able to cut more than $500 million. This budget will cut $2.2 billion more over the next biennium. That means new requests, even very worthy ones that I support, were denied or delayed. For example, the expansion of family care, which helps older people stay in their homes, will be slowed down. We will cut $931 million from existing programs over the next 2 years. These are the deepest cuts our state has ever faced. We studied every agency, looking for every possible saving. But even after paring down and slicing away all the agency spending we could find, we still weren't there. We still weren't where we needed to be. So on top of all the other cuts we made, this budget provides for an across-the-board 1% reduction in all state spending. Some will be more affected by these cuts than others. It's important to recognize that state employees will be among the hardest hit. 1 in 10 state jobs, or 3,600 overall, will be left unfilled. This budget does not provide for any pay raises, and state workers should expect to make higher contributions for health insurance and retirement. I recognize that these cuts are being felt by people who have done everything asked of them, people who have dedicated much of their lives to public service. The sacrifices that they will face are part of the effects of an economic downturn. Sadly, workers across the state, like the GM assembly plant workers in Janesville, are bearing the costs of risky schemes on Wall Street and 8 years of bad decisions in Washington. As deep as the cuts are to our state workforce, I am working hard to avoid layoffs and or furloughs, which many other states are already imposing. Beyond state workers, many others will be affected by the kinds of cuts we will be forced to make. The state will have to trim back its reimbursement rates for services such as medical care. We will have to cut back on worthy grants that go out, grants that I support, such as those that aid recycling efforts or help prevent the spread of invasive species. Under this budget, the Department of Corrections will continue to protect public safety, but it will do so more efficiently. We will ensure that violent offenders will stay in prison, while some nonviolent offenders will be offered opportunities for rehabilitation and a chance to resume productive lives in the community. This budget is designed to make necessary cuts, but also to avoid unnecessary pain. That's not to say that people won't experience longer lines or some declines in service. For example, we will stop selling fishing and hunting licenses at many DNR centers, but we will make sure that they are available at the local bait shop or hardware store. We will stop paying someone to hand out brochures at welcome centers, but we will keep welcoming visitors to Wisconsin. We will close DMV centers, but we will make sure people can still easily get titles and registration. And while we're at it, we can make do with just one license plate per vehicle. We can cut the number of processors at the Department of Revenue, but still get you a speedy refund thanks to more online filing. Taken together, the steps in my plan and the actions we have taken in the current budget mean $1.4 billion in cuts to existing programs. These cuts are huge and unprecedented. They mean we will spend less state tax money this year and next year than we did last year. Many will be called on to share the sacrifices, and I appreciate all of those who are tightening their belts to get us through this difficult time. Our choices would be even more difficult without the legislation that President Obama signed in Denver today. The American Recovery and Reinvestment Plan is very important to Wisconsin and every state in our country. And I want to thank all of the members of our congressional delegation who supported it. I especially want to thank Congressman Dave Obie for his vital role in shaping the Recovery and Reinvestment Plan. As chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, Congressman Omby was a great ally. We met in Wausau the day after the election, as everyone saw what terrible shape the economy was taking. He fully understood the challenges Wisconsin and every other state in the country faced. He worked closely with other governors and with me to protect education and health care. We now have a recovery plan that lets states be partners in moving this country forward. It will be up to us in this budget to make sure that we use the stimulus money wisely. The recovery plan very clearly does two things. First, it helps people get people to work immediately, and it lays a foundation for future economic growth. Here in Wisconsin, we are able to increase our funding for transportation by 20% in this budget. We will be able to get to work on fixing bridges and roads. We will make sure our cities have clean water. We will connect more of Wisconsin with passenger rail. And we will provide clean alternative energy to power our state. We will modernize our medical records to make patient treatment safer and more efficient. We will make our communication networks stronger and fix our schools. This state will work hard to meet the challenge of this act, to maintain jobs, and to get people to work on projects that add long-term value to this state. Second, the recovery plan recognizes that during this current economic crisis, we cannot let education and access to health care deteriorate. It will help us keep teachers in classrooms. It will help us make sure a sick kid gets to see a doctor. It means that as the economy is trying to recover from a deep recession, we will be in a better position to move our country forward. This budget recognizes that the federal spending is one-time assistance to the state. Ordinarily, base budgets grow. But my plan makes cuts that will be in place for years to come. Most economists predict it will take 4 or 5 years to be fully restored to where we were. So we are preparing now. We are using the stimulus money wisely and holding firm on our future spending commitments. By making the cuts I outlined and by making wise use of the federal money, we close about two-thirds of the budget deficit over the biennium. If we continued on that course, the gap would have to be closed by nearly doubling the level of cuts we have already made. Let me be clear about what that would mean. You could eliminate the entire Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Revenue, the Department of Workforce Development, and the Department of Commerce, and not have cut enough. So making additional cuts of that magnitude would mean many things. We would have to cut our schools by hundreds of millions of dollars, leading to fewer teachers, larger classes, and sharp property tax increases. We would have to cut the University of Wisconsin system by 25% or more, leading to a steep reduction in quality and access and enormous tuition increases. We would have to cut Badger Care Plus for children, slash rates paid to hospitals and doctors, and make seniors pay more for prescription drugs. We would have to cut shared revenues, leading to cuts in police and firefighters. And even with all of those cuts, we would still have a deficit. I do not believe that the people of Wisconsin elected me to watch the University of Wisconsin turn into a second-rate institution. And I don't think they'd want us to lay off thousands of teachers or cut police officers and firefighters. Voters did not elect us to stop kids from getting health insurance. Voters elected us to achieve these victories. We worked hard to get them done, and I am not here to see them overturned. This is really fundamental for me. I grew up with parents who came to age in the Great Depression, and I think about my parents and the priorities that Wisconsin held on to through the Great Depression. If they looked at our situation now, they saw the way most of us live, the houses we have, the cars we drive, the food we eat. They wouldn't believe that we would turn our backs on kids in the classroom or give up access to basic medical care. People in this state have reasonable expectations, and we can meet them. We can draw on our resources and find the revenues we need to keep our priorities whole. And we can do it without raising taxes on the middle class. So I am not going to raise taxes in the way that some have suggested. Some say we should raise the sales tax. I've never done that, and I'm not going to do it now. Or they say we should back off on recently adopted tax cuts for tuition, child care, Social Security, and health insurance. These tax cuts will save middle-class families $360 million over the next 2 years. I worked hard for them with many of you, and I want them to stay. My budget stands up for the people who earn regular paychecks and the people who, through no fault of their own, have lost theirs. There are three targeted ways to raise the revenues we need to protect what's important to Wisconsin. First, this budget calls for taxpayers to pay 1% more on any earnings above $300,000 a year. If you're like 99% of Wisconsin, you won't pay this tax. Second, Wisconsin is the only state with an income tax that exempts 60% of capital gains from any tax. This budget would lower the exemption to 40% of capital gains earnings, still one of the most favorable exemptions in the country. And third, we can pass an oil assessment so that big oil companies, which are still making record profits, pay their share for our roads. These companies make money when people drive on our roads, so it is appropriate that they help maintain them. And we will go after companies that break the law by passing that assessment on to consumers. By making these decisions, we will not just protect the basic expectations people have of state government, we will put our state in a position to move forward and be able to make some valuable investments today. We can help grow our businesses, get people back to work, and strengthen the engines that drive Wisconsin's economy. The fifth principle I followed in preparing this budget was to make decisions that would leave Wisconsin on better financial ground and lead to future growth. We're starting with a $5.7 billion deficit, but under this plan, we will finish the biennium with a positive balance of $270 million. We will put our tax collections in line with our future spending commitments and cut what is called the structural deficit to the lowest level in 10 years. And while we strengthen our financial position, we will make key investments in our state. This budget continues my commitment to build strong Wisconsin businesses that create jobs. It strengthens high-tech companies and medical research. It invests in our farms and our shop floors. It streamlines economic development programs, and it focuses on manufacturing. It awards a tax credit equal to 10% of payroll after new jobs are created. In the bill approved by the Joint Finance Committee today, we will triple the amount of support for angel and early seed stage investors who help launch Wisconsin businesses and allow them to grow. We will also increase our commitment to worker training. Our state has always been home to innovation, and we can make Wisconsin a center for research and development. We are proposing tax credits for companies that significantly increase their commitment to research and development. Their equipment would also be exempted from property and sales tax, just as it is for manufacturers. Our public institutions have rightly gotten a lot of attention for their research, and our private businesses should too. Wisconsin is where the supercomputer came from. It's the home of the outboard motor and stem cell science. We can be the state where companies want to put their new labs. Let's act now so that Wisconsin will be the home to the next generation of technological advances. And as we prepare our businesses to succeed, we can give cities and counties the ability to plan better transportation system, better ways to get people to work. If a region agrees to cooperate on building rail lines or coordinating bus service, we can help make that happen. This budget allows Wisconsin communities to form regional transportation authorities, which will be important tools in driving economic development and adding jobs. Wisconsin's farms are an essential part of our economy. Under the Working Lands Program, this budget will slow the loss of good farmland. We are also going to work to upgrade and modernize our dairy and meat processing industries. Through the federal stimulus package, we will also be able to make major investments that will help Wisconsin lead the country in clean energy. We will go farther with our efforts to develop renewable fuels, harness alternative sources of energy, and create better ways to conserve. These are some of the steps that give us confidence. It is never time to curl up and hide under the covers, especially not now. Our economy is tough, and it's likely to stay tough for a while. But any state that doesn't prepare itself to come out of this recession stronger than it went in is making a serious mistake. Now is our chance to get stronger and get ready for better days to come. If we want our economy to flourish, if we want to help attract and retain talented workers, it is also time to make sure our state takes some basic steps towards fairness and decency. First, we can make sure that domestic partners who work for the state have access to benefits. We can also make sure that a committed couple has visitation rights at a hospital and the right to take the appropriate leave if one has a serious illness. This isn't an issue of being gay or straight. We're not judging people's lives here. But I don't want the state to stand in the way of someone being able to care for their long-term partner. And I don't want the state to be less competitive at our university and other institutions because we don't treat people fairly. And we can keep working on breaking the addiction to tobacco. This budget finally puts in place a statewide smoking ban. I got one to stand up on. Yeah, good. Our neighbors have done it. Half of the country has done it. We can do this now and make Wisconsin's workplaces smoke-free. As we confront tobacco, this budget recognizes that when the cost of cigarettes goes up, fewer teenagers start smoking. The research there is very clear. And we also know that more people decide to quit. When we raised the tax on cigarettes last year, more people called the state quit line during the first week of 2008 than normally called during the entire year. I am proposing an additional 75-cent tax on a pack of cigarettes, and I hope that that's a tax we don't collect for very long. All of my career, I have been fighting big tobacco, and the purpose here is to stop kids from smoking, to help people quit, to improve public health, and to drive down our state's health care costs. Not only can we make our state healthier, we can make it safer by providing more help to our most vulnerable children. This budget increases the quality of child care and makes it more accountable. And last, yet most important, we can show our commitment to education. Our universities and our schools have always been the engines that drive Wisconsin. My budget sees education as our most important function. Education, again, is the one primary area that is receiving any increases. I am making that choice because our schools have to remain accessible and they have to be able to prepare our students to compete with the world. More students will be able to attend our universities under the UW Growth Agenda. One of the few areas this budget increases is financial aid. Under my plan, families with incomes less than $60,000 will not face tuition increases. For those earning more, tuition increases will be modest and in line with what we have seen in recent years. Best of all, this budget makes sure that students will be going to cutting-edge institutions that continue to lead the world in medical technology and biotechnology research. We will move forward with major advancements. The Wisconsin Institutes for Discovery at the University of Wisconsin-Madison will help our state stay on the forefront of life-saving research and help scientists bring their discoveries to the market. The Great Lakes Bioenergy Research Center is one of only three nationally recognized centers in biofuels. With our help and major funding from the federal government, researchers there can unlock new frontiers and renewable sources of energy. The Wisconsin Genomics Initiative draws upon four of our leading institutions to provide individual treatment based on a patient's DNA. It is a groundbreaking collaboration that promises to save lives and treat diseases more effectively than ever. And at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, we are moving ahead with the School of Freshwater Science and the School of Public Health. The plan I am proposing also strengthens our pledge to Wisconsin's eighth graders. Under the Wisconsin Covenant, we promised them that if they maintain good grades, take the right classes, and be good citizens, they will have a place at one of our campuses. The budget I am presenting you tonight for the first prepares for the first class of Wisconsin Covenant scholars who will be graduating high school in 2011. It identifies $25 million that can augment standard financial aid and the private funding that will ensure that they have the resources that they need to get a college degree. Good schools mean kids get off to a good start and go as far in life as their talent and hard work will take them. Good schools build strong neighborhoods and give families strength and hope. In the coming months, I am going to present separate legislation that will allow schools more flexibility in funding if they agree to collaborate, if they find and retain the best teachers, and if they commit to becoming more efficient. I believe that together we can take real action to make our schools even better for our kids, our teachers, and our taxpayers. At its most basic, this is a budget about what we believe is most important for our future. The people of Wisconsin elected us to lead. They expect us to confront our problems, make hard choices, and put our state on a path that makes us stronger. We can do that with a budget that keeps what's important, cuts what isn't needed, protects middle-class taxpayers, and builds towards a better future. Thank you, everyone, and on Wisconsin. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, everybody. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Mike. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks. Thank you. How are you doing? Good. Good to see you.
Not a lot to clap about following Governor Jim Doyle's budget address this year to cover the biennial budget through 2011. A tough budget, obviously. I think the headlines might be tax increases on the wealthy in the state of Wisconsin and what the governor calls cuts. What are the other headlines, Sean?
I think you have to look at sort of the federal stimulus saves the day in a way. There's going to be a lot of arguments over whether the stimulus is going to have any effect on the national economy in the next couple years. But you really can't argue with the fact that, at least for the state budget, it really saved the governor and lawmakers from having to make tougher decisions.
And it came none too soon. We have our expert here, Todd Berry, the president of the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. And Todd, I wondered what your take is on this.
And it's sort of breathtaking because what you hear is not necessarily what may happen. For instance, in going through numbers that you folks have and what I can detect, it seems like 80% of the state budget had no cuts and, in fact, had increases, or at least 75%. There's no cut in the university, no cut in Medicaid, no cut in corrections, no cut in school aids. 1% cut in shared revenues, you're up to 75-80% of the budget. The people that seem to be cut are the same people that got cut in 2003, which are basically the state employees and the operating agencies. And what the public doesn't understand is that's a very small part of the state budget.
Yeah, you just rattled off a list of agencies there, mm-hmm. though. That's about five areas that the state spends on. It is the bulk of the budget, right?
Yep.
I mean, give some perspective on if you were to solve this budget through cuts, what would you have to do to those agencies?
Well, you'd really have to, you know, put everything back on the table if you were doing it by with cuts. Now, as you pointed out, though, what's really going on here is although the general fund budget looks fairly stable or maybe even down and then up a little bit, what's really going on is in the other part of the budget where all the federal money is flowing in, which doesn't get counted in the general fund budget. And when you combine all the funds, it looks to me like total budget money is going up from, you know, $28 billion to $29 billion to $31 billion.
Is there anything budgetarily wrong with using that federal stimulus money to help us out of this pinch?
Well, my concern has always been that the way we have run structural deficits now for over a decade is we have found pots of money that could plug a hole once, and then we'd be back with the hole the next time. We sold tobacco bonds in 2001. The governor did it again in the 2007 budget. We've taken money repeatedly from the transportation fund. Apparently, this budget will again. We've taken money from the patient's compensation fund, the doctor's fund. We've taken money from public utility benefits, the recycling fund. Anything that was a pot of money that was moving, we took to plug a hole. Well, if that's true, then the federal stimulus money is essentially today's transportation money may be appropriate. And so if that's true, and you've got a basically flat general fund budget and a growing budget from all funds, what happens when all the federal stimulus money goes away? It sounds to me like we're in a world of hurt in 2011.
So what's this budget assuming is going to happen with the economy?
Well, the governor sounded more pessimistic about the economy than some folks, and his own tax revenue estimates and the fiscal bureaus show collections rising in 2010-11 by over 4%. I mean, that is not boom, but in the years prior, it was growing 5-6%. So it's not suggesting a total meltdown at the end of the biennium. And so what you may have with these tax increases, and there's a lot of them, is you may have a lot of new money that you can commit going into the 2010 election and the 2011 budget and the 2012 elections. That is exactly how we got into this problem. In 83, we increased the sales tax. We had a hidden income tax increase. We had tons of new money coming in during the boom in the 90s. And we didn't save any of it. We didn't put any in the rainy day fund. We didn't keep hardly any budget balances. We committed it all, and that's how we got into this mess back in the late 90s.
Let's ask about those tax increases. What did you make when you saw and read about the income tax increase?
Well, certainly, there will be the partisan give and take between the Republicans and the Democrats over this. But what's interesting is I thought back to income tax law changes, and I couldn't remember a time that the state budget, any law, increased the state income tax rate since I was an undergraduate at the University of Wisconsin in the early 70s. So we've been trying to move those top rates down. Governor Dreyfus did it. Governor Earl, a Democrat, did it. Governor Thompson did it. And then since then, it's really been status quo. So this is really sort of the first time in almost 40 years.
And yet, this is a time, one could say, that would call for that kind of action.
Yeah, but there's an interesting contradiction here, because there's tax credits for venture capital and angel investing and things to, you know, build the new economy and innovate. But these are the same people that are going to have higher capital gains taxes and higher income tax rates. So do you end up giving with one hand and then just taking it back with the other? That wouldn't seem to spur innovation and creation of new business.
You know, I wanted to interject here and suggest that in this very room from which we are reporting, there is a Republican news conference going on at this moment, and I think we can check in on that and see. I think it's Representative Jeff Fitzgerald speaking now.
This go around. Obviously, when he talks about using that money, it looks like one-time money to fill a budget hole. I think what we really need to focus on, and I think is being lost, is what will come to the state assembly tomorrow. A bill that I thought the governor would actually kind of bring up, something that would try and solve the current budget deficit we're under in the current biennium of $600 million that raises taxes by over $1.5 billion. Every $10 of new taxes to $1 in lapses and cutting, something that is very alarming to us. So not a lot of details, but with that, I would open it up to any questions. Obviously, like I said, short speech, and we're not sure exactly where he was. The governor obviously backed up his budget address by 1 week. Maybe he needed another week. So With that, we take any questions.
Jeff, I came in late, but what's your reaction to the upper end income tax bracket increase and just the overall tax increase?
Yeah, I think you see Governor Doyle.
But we were just speaking with Todd Berry from the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance about his take on this budget, and we were talking about the income tax increase and the increase in capital gains taxes, and you were saying that, you know, it's almost as though the governor is giving with one hand and taking away with the other, and yet it does represent the increases represent a revenue upper, and
but the tax credits for investors are a revenue downer too.
And just for people that that didn't hear the details on these earlier, when you're talking about this income tax increase, the governor's going to create a new category of taxing, and if you're an individual that makes more than $225,000, your income tax is going to go up by a percentage point.
Sure.
Family that earns over $300,000 is going to see the same result. And then there's a cigarette tax increase in this budget of another 75 cents per pack. Todd, what are some of the sort of unintended consequences?
Well, now will move to have a cigarette tax that must be toward the top in the nation, because New Jersey, I think, is at 257.5. When New Jersey went from about $2.05 to $2.57, the net revenue that they brought in from the increase was zero. And I think what happens when you, and of course we've had a large federal increase too, I think what happens is, yes, some people quit smoking, but a lot of people simply start buying on the internet, buying in Rockford, Dubuque. The Missouri cigarette tax is really low. You know, go to Aunt Betty's in St. Louis. So I think there are going to be ways that the state is surprised that they may not get the revenue they think. The thing about the income tax, though, I think that should be said is that there's not general understanding that the people think businesses pay corporate income taxes, and we do have a small increase there. I mean, and I say small because there's a much larger tax increase on small businesses, because these are the folks, you know, a mom and pop business can pull in $200,000-$300,000 of income. They would be affected by this, and these would be the same people that might have 3 or 4 or 5 employees. So another irony in this may be that there's a bigger tax increase on small businesses than there is on big businesses.
It's a tough choice, though, if you want to have a more broad-based tax increase, though, isn't it? I mean, there's more money to be had there, but as the governor said, he doesn't want everybody to exactly feel the pain when times are already tough.
Well, and again, as we started, I don't see a lot of pain as far as cuts. He's talking about a couple $1 billion of cuts, but if all those are is cutting from the increases that were requested last fall, which were $2.8 billion, then there really wasn't any real cut from what they are working on now at all. So again, there's a lot we don't know, and we haven't been given very much to go on very intentionally. You can't see the real numbers to know what's really going on. You know, just see how much an agency's budget is going up or going down, but it sure sounds to me like that the cuts are fairly narrow. One other thing that should be said is school aides are going up a little bit, but because the revenue caps are going up more, I think this could mean a 5-7% increase in school property taxes. I don't want to be held to that, but it my guts tell me it's something of that order of magnitude.
And that's something that they can do even with these property tax caps that are going to be included in this budget as well.
Yeah, and the property tax caps are going to grow a little faster for schools. And then, well, a good example. In the last budget, school aides didn't increase because the budget was late. They didn't increase the aides at all. And the school levies went up 7.4%. So if you're increasing them just a little bit, tells me we're going to, you know, be in that 5-7% range, which is not a small property tax increase.
Yeah, especially at this time. What do you make of some of the growth initiatives that the governor has proposed in this budget and last week as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's some consolidating of tax credits. I'm one that doesn't really like complicated tax forms and tax law, and so anything that simplifies I think is great. There is some expansion of these angel and venture capital credits, but again, these are the very same people that are then going to be in those income brackets that are going to get the income tax increase and the capital gains tax increase. So, you know, I don't know whether we'll get much from it. Is there really any economic, you know, oomph to create new businesses?
Is it your sense that the problem was just so bad and so big that you know, there just wasn't a lot to do? Or where would you go? Yeah. What would you do? This was your budget. You're the expert.
Well, I think it should be said, the problem was very big and potentially very painful. But Sean said it earlier. This is about stimulus money flowing into Medicaid, flowing into school aids in large amounts, in billions, and the freeing up money so you don't have to cut other things. And as I said earlier, the hero behind this budget is Barack Obama and Dave Obey, who wrote the stimulus bill in the House.
And the ink is still sort of drying on this budget, so it's hard to get a sense of the numbers. But again, if you just look at the general fund, and that's where income tax goes, the sales tax goes, if you think about it as the state's checkbook, you're going to see about $28 billion over the next couple of years, which is roughly in line with what happened in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's that all funds budget, which brings in federal money, brings in federal stimulus money, that you start to look at $62, $63 billion. And I remember talking with you a couple of years ago, Fred, and saying $58 billion. So, I mean, that's going up substantially.
It's the federal stimulus money that is definitely stimulating this budget.
It's interesting, though. We I know, are among the states that have a bad problem representing a fairly large proportion of our budget, that being the shortfall going out. And yet you look at states like California and talk about worlds of hurt. You know, they're laying off tens of thousands of workers and they're suspending tax refunds and that kind of thing. And here we are listening to you say, well, you know, hey, we don't have to do any of that here.
Well, the federal stimulus money is quite a lot of money, and there are new revenues. There's a lot of new money from the feds and from the hospitals in the hospital tax. There's new income tax money, new corporate income tax money, new cigarette tax money. So between the stimulus and the new revenues, you got a pretty good pot to work with.
Go ahead.
You touched on state employees a little bit earlier. I mean, what's been sort of their history over the past, really 10 years of fluctuating budgets and budget uncertainty?
We first have to understand that the operating agencies are a small part of the state budget, including corrections, 15% to 20%. Without corrections, less than 10%. So what happens when you take school aids off the table, Medicaid off the table, all these other programs off the table, the folks that have really gotten hit over the last 10 years have been the state employees. There have been years when they've had no pay increases. There have been years when they've had one or two. Now, I understand the listening public will say, well, that's all I've seen, too. And that's a legitimate point. But in the context of the state budget, other people have been getting increases repeatedly, and state operating agencies and employees have pretty much been on a freeze kind of diet for a very long time.
And so in this year, though, I mean, a mixed bag. There's no layoffs, no pay increase, though, and possibly health and premiums.
But when you have have 3,000 positions vacant, not only are you not giving them a pay increase, but you're making them do the work of a couple other people, too. You know, I don't mean to be, you know, sound overly apologetic, but it really is true that the state budget has problems, have really hit small parts of the budget rather than everything. And one of those small parts is state agencies and employees.
Don't you suppose, though, that the larger public, that's exactly where they would have the most pain go?
Sure, I understand. But when the Department of Revenue makes a mistake on a village's shared revenues, or makes a mistake on a city's TIF district, or tax returns aren't processed fast, or the department doesn't assess half of the manufacturing property they're supposed to be to do in a year, all of which are true, then there are things that aren't being done, and there are consequences. Taxpayers in the city of Middleton and in the city of Oregon got hit with consequences of those errors as a result of this legacy of not cutting school aids, not cutting Medicaid, not cutting shared revenue, and giving most of the pain to a relatively small part of the budget.
We've got about a minute left, Todd. I mean, in a very short summation, this is just sort of the first step in this process here. This is the governor saying, this is my plan, what happens next?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Finance Committee will start listening to the public and working on the budget. With the same party controlling both houses in the governor's office, and with a lot of, there is bad news in this budget. There are cuts, there are tax increases. There will be a lot of incentive for the legislature and the governor to get this done very fast. I mean, consider that the budget adjustment bill, we didn't even see language until Monday, and it's already been passed. So when they want to move fast, they can move.
Yeah, that should be a lesson to us. When they want to, they can. All right. Well, Todd Barry, thanks very much for joining
My
us.
Pleasure.
Invaluable. Thank you. That concludes our coverage of the biennial budget address by Governor Jim Doyle. I'm Frederica Freiberg.
And I'm Sean Johnson. You can tune in to coverage on Wisconsin Public Radio tomorrow. Good night.